Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Plenty of purple prose has been written over the years, equating athletes with war heroes, football with battle, and close victories with foreign conquests. The reality of sports and war isn't so pretty, as author Steve Eubanks demonstrates in his new book, All American: Two Young Men, the 2001 Army-Navy Game, and the War They Fought in Iraq, which is published by William Morrow. The book, released on the eve of the 114th Army-Navy football game, explores the paths taken by West Point's Chad Jenkins and Brian Stan of the Naval Academy, both before and after the 9/11 attacks changed their lives and the path of the nation. Steve Eubanks has written more than 30 books, and it's my pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Ian, thank you for having me.
So the book revolves around a chance tackle that happens in the Army-Navy game in 2001. How did you get the idea to follow those two lives who met at that exact moment on the football field, but not again for a long time?
Well, I actually had the idea before I had the players. I thought it would be quite interesting if you took two men who played in that particular Army-Navy game, 2001, because none of the members of that team had gone to either of the academies, assuming that they would go to war. We were a peacetime nation at the time. For the football players, the primary reason to go was to play football. It was a division; they were both Division I schools. They guaranteed being on national television. And so I thought, these guys were at these institutions playing football when their lives changed on 9/11, and I wanted to see how it affected them and how they carried the leadership and the things that they had learned there forward for the next decade.
Tell us about the mood on the campuses those days. Certainly West Point here in our listening area, the security tightened up at that moment as the thought was that West Point could have been a target on September 11th, but also at the Naval Academy. Tell us the feeling that kind of rippled through as people started to learn of what was happening.
Yeah, you know, they were among the last to know, primarily because the student body at those institutions don't have televisions. They had some links to their computers, but unless they were all in class. So particularly at West Point, which was kind of ironic because the hijackers out of Boston had used the Hudson as a visual landmark. So really, all of the cadets had to do was go outside and look up, and they would have seen them. So it was interesting to see the reaction that they had going forward. They were the only football team. West Point was the only football team to practice that day on 9/11. Every other football team in the nation shut down. But the coaching staff and the president of the university said, you know what, the Army never stops. And so they had practice.
And going forward, how did those attacks change the meaning of the rest of the season for each of these teams?
It carried a great deal more significance. For the players, football ended up being an escape for them. It was the one area of life where they still knew what they were doing. Nothing had changed for them on the football field. They still had their assignments. They still had the games to play. Everything else in their lives had changed, what they were studying, what they were training for, just the way the post and the base ended up looking after that. But the football field was the one area where they could put on the pads, go out there, and they felt as though they had some element of control. So for many of them, it was escapism. It was the one area of the day and the one day of the week that they really looked forward to because it gave them a sense that things were back to normal. But, you know, during the rest of the season, clearly things weren't back to normal. The Army team's first away game after 9/11 was in Birmingham, Alabama, at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And they, as they're running out onto the field, as is typical for these sorts of games, the home team runs out first to cheers, and then the visitors run out. And, you know, the cheers aren't quite as loud, or there are a few boos, actually. In this instance, the cheers actually got louder when the Army team ran out onto the field. And the players were sort of stunned. They looked around thinking they might have run out too soon, and it took them a few moments to realize that they were getting a louder standing ovation in a visiting arena than the home team.
Let's back up in time a little bit and talk about each of these men you focus on. Both had been pretty special high school athletes, but maybe not that top-notch Division I level where, you know, they're getting looked at by Ohio State. And it wasn't always such a natural fit that you'd say, hey, that person's going to West Point or that person's going to Naval Academy. So how did it happen?
Sure. I mean, neither of them came from military families. So in the case of Chad Jenkins, He had been recruited to play lacrosse at Ohio State and had been recruited to play quarterback at several Division II schools, but he wanted to play Division I college football. And so when Paul Dietzel, who was the Army recruiter who had Ohio at the time, came and recruited him, Chad really seemed intrigued. He thought, wow, this is an opportunity. Army had a very good football team at the time. They had almost beaten Auburn and ended up going to a bowl game. He thought, wow, this may be it for me. This may be my only opportunity to play in a bowl, to go to a Division I school, and to play football. He didn't even know where West Point was.
He thought it was Indiana.
So he was a complete novice. And actually, when he went home and told his mother that he had made a decision to finally go to West Point and to play for Army, she broke down in tears. So it was certainly not a natural fit. In the case of Brian Stann going to the Naval Academy, it was very similar. He had had several Ivy League offers, but Brian comes from a single family home, relatively lower middle income, in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Kind of grew up on the mean streets of Scranton. So anything shy of a full athletic scholarship, he was just simply not going to be able to take. And the Ivy League didn't offer full athletic scholarships at the time, so he ended up going the one spot where a very good education was free, and that was the Naval Academy.
Moving ahead in the story, eventually they are both going off to serve in Iraq. So how did that happen, and what was the impact on each of these men?
Well, they both understood from the moments after 9/11 that they would be serving. They didn't know it was going to be in Iraq, obviously, at the time. But once boots were on the ground in Iraq, they both kind of felt drawn and compelled to go there. And when they were there, Chad, who was an Army officer, was in the 2nd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment. And if you don't know what that is, those are the guys that you see fast roping in off of helicopters and in the full gear in the middle of the night to kill bad guys in their sleep. As a matter of fact, President Bush's deck of cards with all of the Al-Qaeda leaders that he had sort of on the 52-card deck, Chad and his men took out several of those as they were in both Baghdad and Fallujah. For Brian Stann, he had always wanted to be a Marine, and in fact, his personality fits the Marine Corps as well as anyone you could ever meet. Very driven, very big leader, and he really needed the discipline of being in the Marine Corps. And when he goes over to Iraq during the Second Battle of Fallujah, during something called Operation Matador, he's actually awarded the Silver Star for valor. Just actions that, as you read the story, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's like something out of a superhero movie.
They were both fortunate to get out. Many of their friends did not. How did that change the way they lived the rest of their life? And I mean, your book is kind of broken up into sections. Luckily, there is a after serving, after Iraq story to tell for these guys.
There is, and you know, the both academies are somewhat concerned about what they call five and flyers. The commitment is once you go in, you agree to serve 5 years, and then, you know, of course, you can re-up after that if you want. Not many people are re-upping anymore after their five-year commitment. A lot of the officers and graduates from both academies are getting out, and Chad and Brian are among them. Chad ended up going into the FBI. He ended up becoming an FBI counterterrorism agent in South Florida. He had a little bit of a tough transition. I mean, when he first came out, when you've been in combat, there is nothing that in a civilian life that will ever simulate that. Nothing will ever get your adrenaline up like combat, and there's no way to simulate or to replicate the feelings that you had when you were doing that job. So, you know, it was difficult for him to come back in and sell medical supplies, for example. But he was able to really find his niche back in the FBI when he was once again doing what he had done over there, which is chase bad guys. And he now owns his own security firm in South Florida, the Jenkins Group. For Brian Stann, the transition was much easier because he went straight from the Marine Corps to the octagon of the UFC. When he got out, he was a leading middleweight contender in the Ultimate Fighting Championships. And he ended up, you know, being on pay-per-view and had several bouts in Las Vegas. I was fortunate enough to go see him at a couple of his fights. And he is now a color analyst for the UFC.
Yeah, and he had had some violent outbursts earlier in his life, so he eventually kind of channeled that well after the service. It was funny to see him kind of grow into that role from where we start in the beginning of the story.
Yeah, it is. You know, he grew up in a very rough neighborhood, didn't have a father around, really sort of longed for a male role model in his life. And as a result of that, he got in a lot of scraps. He got in a lot of fistfights from a very early age. Had to learn to control that, had to learn to channel that, particularly after his mother, to her credit, who scraped and scrimped and did what it took to send him to a private high school. He had to make some adjustments on the fly and really learn to channel and control his emotions. The Academy helped. The Marine Corps certainly helped. And then to come out of the Marine Corps and be in the UFC, I think, was the perfect transition for him.
Steve Eubanks is the author of All American, Two Young Men, the 2001 Army-Navy Game, and the War They Fought in Iraq. And it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.